Okay, so get this. Imagine you're living in pre-revolution America. You owe money to someone in Britain.
Okay.
And then, bam, a war breaks out. Suddenly, you're told to just pay the government instead. Years pass, the war ends, and just when you think you're in the clear,
Yeah.
the original creditor shows up demanding the full amount.
Oh, wow.
Talk about a legal nightmare.
Yeah.
That's the wild scenario at the heart of Ware v. Helton,
Okay.
a Supreme Court case that set a major precedent for how treaties and state laws interact in the U.S. Ready to unpack this?
Absolutely. This case is a fascinating window into the early days of the Republic when the balance of power between states and the federal government was still being figured out,
Right.
and it throws in a curveball international treaties,
Yeah.
adding another layer of complexity.
Right. 1774, tensions with Britain are rising, and we've got these two Virginians, Houghton and Epps, who owe a significant sum to British creditors.
Okay.
Then the Revolution kicks off, and in 1777, Virginia passes a law essentially allowing debtors to pay their debts to the state instead.
Interesting. So it was a strategic move, really,
Right?
by allowing debtors to pay the state. Virginia was essentially seizing British assets during wartime.
Clever.
It's a tactic that's been used throughout history, using financial leverage in times of conflict.
But then the Treaty of Paris is signed in 1783, officially ending the war.
Okay.
And here's the kicker. Article 4 of that treaty guarantees that British creditors can still collect those pre-war debts
Uh-oh.
without lawful impediment. Looks like trouble is brewing.
Yeah, and it creates a direct conflict.
Right.
On one side, you have Virginia's law aimed at weakening Britain's financial position during the war. And
Right.
on the other, you have this international treaty, part of a peace agreement designed to smooth over relations and ensure stability.
So who wins out in this legal tug of war? Enter the players in our courtroom
Come
drama.
here.
We've got Ware representing the estate of those original British creditors.
Okay.
They're not letting this go and demand the full debt be paid, as if that wartime state payment never happened.
And then we have Hilton, our Virginian debtor, who's probably thinking, wait, I followed the law, paid my debt, and now I have to pay again.
Yeah.
It highlights the uncertainty of the time. Imagine trying to navigate those legal waters.
It's a classic caught between a rock and a hard place situation.
Yeah.
He did what he thought was right at the time, following the law of his state,
Right.
but now he's facing the weight of an international treaty.
Exactly. And this case lands right on the doorstep of the Supreme Court.
Wow.
The core question, does a treaty like this Treaty of Paris actually overpower state law? Does the Constitution Supremacy Clause, the idea that federal law trumps state law,
Yeah.
mean that treaties can essentially override conflicting state actions?
That's a huge question, and the arguments on both sides get pretty intense,
Oh, yeah.
where on behalf of the British creditors argues that the Treaty of Paris is basically the ultimate law of the land, meaning Virginia's law can't stand in its way.
Right.
They're pushing the idea that when it comes to treaties, the federal government calls the shots and states need to fall in line.
It's a compelling argument, especially considering the importance of a unified national voice in foreign policy.
Yeah.
The Supremacy Clause, while not mentioning treaties explicitly, was designed to prevent exactly this kind of conflict, a patchwork of state laws undermining federal authority.
But Hilton's lawyers aren't backing down right.
No.
They argue that Virginia had every right to manage debts within its borders,
Right.
and Congress can't just invalidate what the state did retroactively. They're basically saying that this is about more than just a debt. It's about states' rights and their ability to govern themselves.
Exactly. It goes to the heart of the ongoing debate about federal power versus state sovereignty.
Right.
How much power should the federal government have? Where do we draw the lines?
Yeah.
This case forces us to confront those very questions.
And it all comes down to the Supreme Court. They have to decide which side has the stronger legal footing in this high-stakes battle.
Right.
A decision that could have huge implications, not just for this case, but for the future of the nation.
It's a defining moment for the young nation, setting a precedent for how it will handle international agreements and manage the delicate balance between state and federal power.
Right.
The stakes couldn't be higher.
Welcome back. We left off with the Supreme Court facing this major question. Can a treaty, in this case, the Treaty of Paris, actually override a state law?
Right.
It was Hylton, who thought he had settled his debt years ago, now on the hook for the full amount.
Yeah, it's a big one.
It's a decision that could send shockwaves through the legal system and shape the future of the young nation.
And the court delivered a verdict that did just that in a 4-1 decision.
Wow.
They sided with, we're upholding the supremacy of the Treaty of Paris, and declaring Virginia's debt relief law unconstitutional. It was a clear message. Treaties hold serious weight in American law.
A 4-1 decision that's pretty decisive. What were the main points the justices brought up in their opinions? What led them to side so strongly with Ware?
Well, the majority opinions really emphasize the Supremacy Clause. Justice Chase, for example, used some pretty strong language.
Okay.
Stating that any state laws that clash with the treaty are essentially prostrate, powerless before the supreme law of the land.
So no wiggle room there.
Yeah.
It sounds like the Supremacy Clause was the linchpin of the court's decision. But did all the justices who sided with Ware agree on the reasoning, or were there different perspectives at play?
They were united in their decision, but their concurring opinions did offer some interesting nuances. Justice Patterson, for instance, zeroed in on the specific wording of the Treaty of Paris.
Okay.
Remember that phrase, without lawful impediment?
Right.
Patterson argued that this language was crystal clear, no room for states to interfere with debt collection.
It's like the treaty writers anticipated this kind of conflict and made sure to shut it down right from the start.
Right. And Justice Wilson brought a different angle to the table. He argued that when the U.S. declared independence, it inherently agreed to abide by international law.
Okay.
Seizing debts from foreign creditors, in his view, went against that commitment and would hurt the nation's reputation on the world stage.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Imagine trying to negotiate treaties or trade deals if you had a reputation for just wiping away debts whenever it suited you.
Yeah.
Not exactly a recipe for international trust.
Exactly. And Justice Cushing, in his concurrence, dropped a real legal bombshell.
Uh-oh.
He stated that the treaty nullified Virginia's law ab initio, meaning from the beginning.
Hold on. So even though Houghton paid his debt under that Virginia law, it's like it never happened.
Yeah.
It's got to be a tough pill to swallow for him. Talk about adding insult to injury.
It definitely highlights the retroactive power of treaties. The court essentially rewound the clock, rendering Houghton's payment under the state law void. It shows how a treaty can completely reshape the legal landscape, even impacting actions taken before it was ratified.
Okay, so we've got four justices basically laying down the law, making it crystal clear that the treaty trumps Virginia's attempt to interfere with these debts. But there was one dissenting voice, right? Justice Iredell. It's always important to hear those alternative viewpoints, especially in a landmark case like this.
Absolutely. Justice Iredell's dissent is crucial because it gives us a counterargument.
Okay.
He believed that states have inherent power over contracts within their borders and that a treaty shouldn't be able to just erase those rights. It's a perspective that highlights the ongoing tension between federal power and state sovereignty, a tension that, as you pointed out earlier, is still very much alive today.
It's a bit like the debates we still have about things like federal mandates versus states' rights.
Yeah.
Some issues just never go away, do they?
You're right. Those core questions about federalism are woven into the fabric of our legal and political systems. And Iredell's dissent also raises a really interesting point about the potential impact of treaties on individual rights. Can a treaty just override contracts that were made in good faith under existing state law? It's a complex question that continues to be debated in legal circles.
So it seems like Ware v. Houghton, in addition to resolving this specific debt dispute, opened up a Pandora's box of legal questions that we're still wrestling with today.
Yeah.
It's amazing how a seemingly straightforward case can have such far-reaching implications.
Indeed, and that's where the true legacy of Ware v. Houghton comes into focus.
Where?
It's not just about some pre-revolution debts. It's about shaping the very foundations of American law and how the U.S. interacts with the global community. The court's decision had ripple effects that extended far beyond this particular case.
Okay, so we've covered the arguments, the verdict, and even heard from the dissenting voice. Now let's shift gears and talk about the long-term impact of this landmark case. How did Ware v. Houghton shape the legal landscape and continue to influence legal thinking even centuries later? Buckle up, because we're about to dive into the lasting legacy of this pivotal Supreme Court decision. Welcome back to our deep dive into Ware v. Houghton. We've walked through the facts of the case, the conflicting laws, and the Supreme Court's reasoning in siding with the British creditors. Now let's explore how this decision continues to echo through the halls of American law even today.
Yeah, it's a case that law students and legal scholars still dissect, you know, showing how a seemingly simple debt dispute can have ripple effects that shape a nation's legal system.
So what are some of those long-term impacts? It feels like Ware v. Houghton did a lot more than just settle who had to pay whom.
It certainly did. One of the biggest takeaways is how it cemented the principle of federal supremacy. Ware v. Houghton made it crystal clear that in the United States, treaties are the supreme law of the land and that states are bound by them regardless of their own laws. This was crucial for establishing a strong national government that could effectively engage in foreign policy and international agreements.
It's like the court was telling the states, look, we get it, you have your own powers, but when it comes to treaties, the federal government is in charge. We need to present a united front to the world.
Exactly. And this idea of federal supremacy, as established in Ware v. Hylton, has been cited in countless cases since then, covering everything from environmental regulations to immigration law. It's a cornerstone of our legal system, ensuring that the federal government can act decisively on issues of national importance.
But Ware v. Hylton also did something else pretty significant. It gave us an early example of the Supreme Court flexing its muscles and striking down a state law. We're talking about judicial review, a power that became even more prominent in later cases like Marbury v. Madison.
That's right. Ware v. Hylton showed that the Supreme Court wasn't afraid to step in and declare a state law unconstitutional, especially if it clashed with a treaty or federal law. This power of judicial review, though not explicitly stated in the Constitution, has become one of the most important checks and balances in our system, ensuring that all branches of government operate within the bounds of the Constitution.
So in a sense, this seemingly simple debt dispute helped pave the way for the Supreme Court to become the ultimate arbiter of the law in the U.S. Talk about a lasting legacy.
Absolutely. And there's another aspect of Ware v. Hylton that's worth noting. It demonstrated the young nation's commitment to honoring its international obligations even right after a war of independence.
Yeah.
By ruling in favor of the British creditors, the U.S. signaled that it took treaties seriously and was ready to uphold its end of the bargain.
It's a powerful statement, especially in that historical context. The U.S. could have easily said, look, we just fought a revolution. We're not beholden to agreements made before independence. But instead, they chose to uphold the treaty, showing the world they were a reliable partner on the global stage.
Precisely. It helped establish the U.S. as a trustworthy player in the international community, which was crucial for building diplomatic and economic relationships. It sent the message that America, despite its revolutionary origins, was committed to the rule of law and its international commitments.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Ware v. Hylton, what's the key takeaway you want our listener to walk away with? What should they be thinking about as they go about their day?
I think Ware v. Hylton serves as a powerful reminder that the law is a living, breathing thing. It's constantly evolving, shaped by historical events, political forces, and interpretations of the Constitution. It also highlights that balance between federal power and state sovereignty, a tension that continues to shape our legal and political landscape.
And perhaps most importantly, it shows us that even seemingly minor legal disputes can have huge ripple effects that extend far beyond the courtroom. They can shape a nation's identity, its relationships with other countries, and even the very principles that govern society. So the next time you encounter a legal case, even if it seems obscure, take a moment to consider its potential impact. It might just be a Ware v. Hylton in the making.